Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm Stephen Bowden, who is definitely, definitely not leaving the podcast.
And I'm Jacqueline Berto, who is not a duck.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who have been dressing up as Madame Bovary for World Book Day. Welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes of The Archers are written by Katie Hymns, which makes it 2 weeks in a row, which is unusual. Coming up, we have calls from
Catherine, who hasn't called in for ages and who wishes that all police officers were as honourable as Harrison.
Witherspoon, who is worried on Paul's behalf.
Pip from Thornton Heath, who provides an insider's view on Harrison's situation.
Glynn, who thinks that Fallon and Harrison don't agree on something else.
Claire from Clapham, who thinks that Alistair and Denise need to sort their lives out soon.
And finally, Isabel, who's calling in after a gap of more than 2 years with thoughts on Alistair and Denise and Alice, Harry and Chris. We also have an email from Chris in Indiana, plus A Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from Ben, and the Tweets of the Week from Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey here, Queen of Tartan Twitters. And it's time for a quick reminder of This Week in Ambridge. Lots of time this week spent at veterinary surgery. The back and forwards between Alistair and Denise. They spent a lot of time talking and also snogging in the medical supplies cupboard. They nearly got caught by Paul, who's frankly being a bit clueless and definitely wearing blinkers not to notice them. Will they? Won't they? Alistair decided he was going to leave the practice. Paul and Jakob had a falling out, and we ended up at the end of the week, well, Alistair not leaving, for now at least, even to go and be an abattoir vet, and Denise waiting for her husband John to come back from St. Lucia. Dum dun dun. Jimus and Jazza were there to support Alistair throughout it all, and Jazza beat Alistair at Scrabble, spurred on by special roast potatoes. Jimus tried to help Alice sort out a costume for World Book Day, although his choices of Shakespearean doomed ladies were all vetoed. Instead, they sorted out a very hungry caterpillar, and Martha won first prize. Hurrah! The ongoing saga of Alice, Harry and Harrison winds on, with guest appearances from Chris and Fallon. Harry and Fallon had an encounter in the tea room. My favourite bit was when she brought his coffee and cake out and plonked on the table with a huffed out, "I hope it chokes you." There was much to-ing and fro-ing, at the end of which Harry is going to the hearing, Harrison's disciplinary hearing, and is apparently going to say lots of lovely things about Harrison, and it will all be splendid. There are several weeks between now and the hearing, so there's plenty of opportunities for it to all go tits up. Martha had a party on Friday afternoon, her preliminary birthday day, and it involved lots of tea and cake. Harrison bought her a doll's house, which was enormous, and Martha loved it. Harrison then blabbed to Chris about Harry, and you could just hear that Chris was planning to catch her with Harry in the immediate future and I suspect it will not be a pleasant little chat. Brian, on the other hand, was a grand old Papa Bear in his defence of Alice. I was sad there were no mentions of how lovely her perfume was. I wonder if she flogged it on eBay. Well, I can hardly wait for next week. Hope it's a good one, everybody.
Thank you so much for that, Sue. Excellent as usual. So, Jacqueline, how has the last week been treating you?
Well, I think it just needs a strong line drawing under it. It has been a, frankly, shitty week for me. How's your week been, Stephen?
I suppose the high point or the low point of the week was taking Tangle to the vet.
Oh, my God.
It was only this time for a dental checkup. The vet is about 2 kilometres away from here, and I have one of those traditional pet carriers. And Tangle isn't the lightest of cats, and the whole thing is a bit heavy and awkward, and it bangs against my legs when I walk with it. So I decided to invest in a pet-carrying backpack.
Oh.
That turned up just before I was due to go to the vet, so I was pleased about that. So I put a blanket in, stuffed Tangle into the carrier. She objected like mad, and she was yowling all the way to the vet's. When we got there, I discovered that she had managed to pee on the towel that I put in the bottom and started pooping as soon as I took her into the actual appointment. By this time, she'd settled down. She'd had about 15 minutes sitting in the waiting area. And then she complained a bit, got out, was fairly well behaved for the vet, who had a look at her and decided that she needed about £800 worth of dental work done.
Ugh.
That's general anaesthetic and x-rays and all that sort of stuff. So it was a bit less than last time I took her for similar type of work. But then at the end, I picked up the cat carrier, put it onto the table where Tango was, and she immediately jumped straight into it.
the least of the evil options. What
yes.
A life Tangle leads you.
I know. So in just before Easter, I'm taking her in. And the real pain is she's not allowed to have anything to eat immediately before the operation. And she gets her food first thing in the morning and scoffs it all straight away. So I'll be taking her in on Wednesday. And the last time she will have been fed will have been about 6 o'clock on Tuesday morning. She will be complaining like mad when food doesn't arrive on Wednesday morning. And I will have to put up with a hungry and very loud and moaning cat all Wednesday morning until I can hand her over to the vets. And they will then take her off my hands, put up with her, put her under general anaesthetic and so forth.
So how was life at the vets? Were they all behaving well? Were they fighting in amongst themselves? Or were they absolutely superbly professional as they should be at that price?
There was no sign of anybody like Don James is supposed to be. Doug and Don made me think immediately of Doug and Dinsdale Piranha from Monty Python.
They made me think of the Chuckle Brothers. I don't know about anything else. We've had quite a lot of vets and a lot of Harrison and Fallon this week and a lot of calls about them. So I guess we better get on.
Okay, in which case we'll go like this.
Hello, Tiger.
And first up is a call from Catherine, not Catherine that we've had fairly recently. This is another Catherine who hasn't called in for a while.
Hi, Dumpty Dummers. This is Catherine Chevalier calling in after a very long break. I just posed a question about if only real life were represented by what we see in the Archers and that we actually could be confident that all our police officers have the same decency and commitment to their community as Harrison Burns. I know the case of Wayne Cousins that's been back in the news and the inquiry basically said he should never have been allowed to be recruited as a police officer. I do appreciate that this is the tiniest of tiny minorities. I just wish real life was more like the Archers sometimes. Now, yes, this is clearly a plot device, I think, to get Harrison out of the police service so he and Fallon can potentially move to take over the Bull. He had expressed an interest of leaving the police service. I don't think Fallon would actually have been as stupid enough as to take Alice to hover outside the police station. So it feels a little bit clumsy, but I can see where it's going. But I don't know about you. I would love to have Harrison Burns as the local Bobby. Kind man who seems to be able to show some common sense, although occasionally a few lapses of judgment I do appreciate. In this instance, he was just trying, just he was trying to protect Martha and Alice. And I think that's so important. Very interested to hear everybody else's views. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, thanks for that call, Catherine. Yeah, great to have you back again. It's very interesting, the different views we see on social media, on our own Dumpty Dum Facebook page about Harrison, because some people see him as a buffoon. Other people see him as a kind and gentle member of the community. Personally, I fall into that second category, as does Catherine. He's not a buffoon, but he is living in a village. And we talked about this quite a bit last week, didn't we? About the fact that there are no village bobbies anymore, but he lives in a village and you get involved with people in village life. And there are quite a few people mention Harrison in their calls. Maybe we don't want to talk too much about his oversharing at this point. But I like Harrison as a character in The Archers because this week he's thinking about the cricket. He wants to be part of village life. So maybe, yes, in the end, as we've said before, in the end, maybe the bullies where they should end up. But his oversharing has just gone too far. He hasn't learned a lesson.
I like Harrison too. So I hope we don't end up agreeing too much on all of these things. But yes, I think Harrison is a really nice guy. I think he is struggling with the complexity of living in the village on the one hand and being a policeman on the other when he is coming into professional contact with people that he meets in his day-to-day life. And there's been a lot of discussion on social media about the balance between those two. Not so much on the Dumpty Dum Facebook page. Actually, the Academic Archers have had loads of people saying, surely Harrison could have had this conversation or that conversation without breaching confidence. And as I think Pip's call will tell us when we come that far, it's not really like that. And I think that it is an incredibly difficult thing to do. He is going to have been trained in all of this sort of stuff. He will know all there is to know about the rules, about data protection, about confidentiality and so on. I'm a civil servant. I get mandatory training in that space. And I don't have a position where I'm actually running into data about people that I know. In fact, I'm rarely running into data about people at all in my job, but everybody in the organization has to do this mandatory training. And I think that's pretty much true across the whole of the civil service, probably across the whole of the public sector, that you do need to be trained. You get mandatory training on this alongside your mandatory counter-bribery and fraud training. I think that it's not that he doesn't know what he's supposed to be. It's just he's really struggling with it.
Yeah, I think he's struggling with that, the friendship and the professionalism. In fact, even here, when I was first elected as a local councillor in 2014, we were sent on a course for the day, which of course being French, it includes lunch and all the rest of it, which is rather long. And we learned about our position and the integrity of our position and what we should be sharing and how do we share things, talk about people at home, because we live in small villages. And my husband is the ex-mayor of this village. So whenever I come home from a meeting, he's often curious to know what's happened. And so it's a very difficult balance that I find and I sometimes fail at. But luckily, Loic is a very silent-mouthed person, would never repeat it. But yeah, it's a difficult position. And I think Harrison is in a difficult position. And it's one of those stories that it's going to roll out in the next few weeks, isn't it? Because it's going to come up in 2 weeks, his tribunal.
Yes, which is, I think, pretty fast moving compared to real life. But it's one of those things where it's the sort of thing that does get a bit compressed on the Archers. Let's move on to our next call, which is from a regular caller in Ra, and it, as always, starts like this.
Y'all know how this goes. Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, caller entering in between patients following Monday's episode. So I'll be briefer than usual. I've made a number of early week caller-ins lately, but I really wanted to get this one in before Paul returns tomorrow. I've been thinking about this for a few weeks since Paul left with his father to take care of his grandmother. But first, a brief note about Harry. I know you're all tired of me pontificating about him. I was glad that he showed a little progress in terms of thinking about engaging in treatment. Again, remember how long it took for Alice to enter treatment? and I do hope he says the right thing when he talks about Harrison to the police tribunal. Now, back to Alistair, Denise, and Paul. Today we heard Alistair confess his love to Denise, and Denise admitted that her marriage is on life support. So obvious to them and to us, they will embark upon a relationship. We shan't call it an affair, but no mention as to any concerns about how this may affect Paul. My prediction is that he will both be emotionally devastated and hit the roof with anger at finding out, as the Doris Day song goes, that his mother had a secret love and that it has been Alistair. Paul will feel betrayed by both of them. While Alistair has been both a mentor and a father figure to him, Paul's father is still his father, and Paul will need to protect him. Remember, they have just spent several weeks of bonding times together. This will have great repercussions on the practice and whether Denise and Alistair will feel that they can continue on this relationship journey. What do you think? Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that call, Witherspoon. Now, Witherspoon called in, I think it was on Sunday, or just after the Sunday episode, so very little had happened in the development of the story at the vets, but I think Witherspoon has been pretty good at predicting likely outcomes. Paul did, in fact, hit the roof, but not about discovering the relationship between Alistair and Paul, but in fact, because of the way that Alistair was reacting to the situation and choosing to leave, and as Paul put it, being very weird. And I think that we probably still have the other shoes to drop when he does find out about that. Now, it's clear from Paul's conversations with his father, he's very close to his father, I think particularly has been since the trip to St. Lucia, and he sees his father changing. And I think if his father does go ahead with these attempts to fix the marriage, then Paul will be incredibly supportive of that. And it will all be very awkward. And then when he does find out that Alistair has feelings for Denise, that will be really challenging. But the other possibility, of course, is that John's attempts to fix the marriage are desultory at best and just don't amount to anything. Paul then gets frustrated with John, and perhaps he will then be more amenable to understanding what it is that Denise sees in Alistair. Because I think that what Paul feels strongly will relate to Denise far more than Alistair. Yes, Alistair has been his mentor, but Denise is his mother. And that's where his anger, if there is any anger, is going to be.
Yeah, I agree with all that you said there about Witherspoon's call. One of the things I took away from the very beginning of the week was that when Denise said why they hadn't split up, although their marriage was had been failing for many years and they should have done, she mentioned the children. What children? The child? We don't know that she's got other children, do we?
No, if she does, they must be adult children living somewhere else.
Yeah.
Possibly where John is based, which I think he might still be in Borsetshire, because it felt like going to wherever it was in the Black Country was a trip away rather than closer to home.
Yeah. So, and obviously, they could easily have other children, but it's slightly weird that we've got this mother and son working together, and they've even lived together over that period when Uncle Rufus, or whoever it was, staying with John. And we've never heard and hide the hair of another child. So I was quite surprised by that. It distracted me, thinking, children, what have I missed? What have I missed?
Yes, and if they don't feature in their lives very actively because we've never heard of them, then maybe there's one or two of them married and so forth.
Yeah.
But why would that be a reason for keeping together with John?
No, exactly. Well, maybe Paul is what age? You always know these things. He's in his early 20s?
Mid-20s, I think, yes.
Mid-20s. So when your last child becomes, my last child is only turning 22 this year, and she's still very much around and at home. So to break up the happy home, if that was going to happen in the last few years, would have been devastating to her. And Paul is only just out of that period, and he obviously lived with somebody before he moved into the stables with Lily and Josh. But yeah, the other children could well be older and moved on, but Paul is the last one, maybe the youngest. But there's quite a few people, a couple of callers coming on that talk about Paul and the situation with Denise, Alistair, and eventually at the end of the week, Jacob. But very good early prediction there from our Witherspoon. And as you say, he knows his people, doesn't he?
Yep. But our next call is back to Harrison and his situation. And it's one of those brilliant calls from somebody who really knows what they're talking about.
Good morning, Dumpty Dumland. It's Pip here from Thornton Heath. Please excuse my horrid cold. I'm just calling with regards to the Harrison situation. I've just seen on the Facebook group over the last few days that there's been a lot of conversation about why on earth did Harrison sort of dob himself in, as it were. And I thought I'd offer a little bit of context just as a serving police officer at the moment. Essentially, he didn't have a choice. He did have a choice as to whether or not he obviously shared private and confidential information with his friend. And we should all agree, morally, that was the right thing to do. But professionally, absolutely not. And obviously, assuming a complaint would come in, irrelevant of that fact, you would have to self-refer to your line management and report what you've done, because one of the key competencies and values in College of Policing throughout the UK is honesty and integrity. And I think, as we've all seen in the news, police officers found to not have honesty and integrity, they should not be a police officer. So it's a pretty golden rule. So in this context, he would be restricted whilst an investigation from the internal sort of investigations team of that constabulary, so Department of Professional Standards of sorts, would investigate. And that would typically take about a year because there's just so many. And from there, if it found to be something bigger, then it would be referred onto the IPC. But it would not be unlikely that he would lose his job. Would not be unlikely at all. And he would lose his pension and he would lose everything that went with it. So really, it's a very serious thing. But in reality, they would need to find something for him to do now, because he wouldn't be able to be on any of our active investigation at all. Yeah, lovely. Well, thank you very much, everybody. And I hope everyone is well. And catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Pip. I am absolutely delighted that you phoned in. All for the last 2 weeks, I've been thinking, we need a message from Pip. I know she's a serving police officer. And a newly married serving police officer, if my memory is serving me right. Thanks very much for all that. Such a brilliant way of putting it all in perspective for us, because as we've said, the Ambridge Fairy type of timescales are obviously acting better. Sad that there are so many inquiries like this going on, and that it would take about a year for Harrison's inquiry to come into place. In fact, the fact that it's going to happen quickly moves Alison's Harry storyline on for us. I love the fact that one of those key values for serving police officers is honesty and integrity. And having been brought up as a guide and scout leader, that is one of the things that we always used to say about honesty and integrity. So promoting the scouts as well as the police, it all comes from the same place, doesn't it?
Yes, I thought that was an excellent call. I was struck by Pip emphasising that it was quite possible that Harrison would lose his job.
Mm.
I'd been fishing around in the guidance issued by College of Policing, and my conclusion was coming towards loss of rank rather than actually being fired. But Pip clearly knows this stuff better than I do. And it is important. If Harrison hadn't reported himself and Harry had come in and made a complaint, then I'm sure it would have been even more serious, because as she says, that business of this being a core competence. And if it was found out that he had done this and had not reported himself, then I think that there would be no doubt that he would be losing his job, losing his pension and all of that. He's been put on desk duties. I don't know what there is. I guess that's just shuffling paperwork and generally taking leave as well. I think that if he's got any accumulated leave, he'd be encouraged to take that as well. And I suspect that the atmosphere at the station, if it got around that he was suspended from operational work, which I think that he would have to, given that he's a sergeant, then maybe, I don't think it'd be a pleasant place to work.
No, I'm not sure, but maybe desk sergeants, does that still exist? Do you still have, we have at our gendarmerie, we have someone who's always the desk sergeant, and that's his job. He meets the general public.
Yes, books people in when they're arrested or processed and so forth.
And deals with members of the general public when they arrive. Obviously, you ring a bell, the video comes up and you speak to them on video, and then they let you through the security. And I assume that's the same in most police stations nowadays. But there must be someone there who does all the paperwork, finding out who to pass things on to.
Yes, but I have a feeling that that's the sort of job that has been civilianised over the years.
Because
police civilians are cheaper to employ than constables, and therefore administrative jobs would be more likely to be done by police civilians. So those jobs might not be available to him.
Well, This is very interesting. This whole storyline and all about the police and everything has taught me how little I know about the British police force and the workings of it. So hopefully all our American, North American listeners and other people who live in other countries are learning something as well, because it's fascinating.
Absolutely. And Pip, please do call in again every week, if possible, when things develop in this story, and just give us that context, because I think it's so helpful to get an inside view rather than somebody like me who is a civil servant, but nowhere near the police, and therefore...
You're good at looking things up, Stephen, so that's always very helpful, whereas I tend to wing it. Google is not my best friend. I tell you what. Life experience, that's me. You're the bookman.
Right, let's go on to our next call, and this one is from Glyn.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Glyn here. Thursday night has rolled around again, and I definitely feel as if this week's episodes in The Archers are building up towards tomorrow, Friday's episode, which I think, because of family commitments, I may not hear until quite late in the weekend, if not Monday. But I do have a thought, a thesis arising from the week's episodes so far, and it concerns Fallon and Harrison. Often we as Dumpty Dummers think there's a tension in their relationship because of their different views on having children. I wonder if the real tension in their relationship is their different views towards ambition. And perhaps Fallon, without being in any way greedy or avaricious, she wants to reach her full economic potential. So she's ambitious and driven in that way. Harrison is not the same. He's reasonably content and perhaps looking forward to a life where perhaps he doesn't have to provide for a large family, and maybe that gives him a little bit of leeway in his career plans. And maybe we're building up to a conversation between the two of them along those lines, not about children, but about, are they ambitious? And perhaps in a roundabout way, that'll lead them to concluding that we should do something together. Maybe taking on the ball. Well, we'll see. Have a great week, everybody. Stay safe. Thank you to the hosts of the podcasts, and speak soon.
Thank you for that call, Glyn. And I think you do make a very interesting point about the different attitudes to life between Fallon and Harrison. However, I wouldn't say that it was because Fallon is ambitious and Harrison isn't ambitious. I think they're ambitious in different ways. And I think that Fallon is more driven by doing stuff, creating stuff, running her own business, all that sort of thing. Harrison has gone into the police, and I don't think you go into the police unless you have a real drive towards public service. And that's something that a lot of people in business don't understand about people in the public sector, that it's not that they're not driven, that they're not doing it. It's just, it's a different sort of motivation. And a lot of people join the police, the military, the civil service for reasons of wanting to do good, wanting to achieve things on a society level rather than for personal benefit. Whereas people go into business because they're ambitious to create something. And I think they're equally valid, equally good reasons for doing things. And to suggest that one is ambitious and the other one isn't, I think, is a bit misleading. I think that they are driven by different things. Now, the question then becomes, would running a pub work for both of those? And there's an argument that says it would, that on the one hand, you need somebody who is making sure that the pub is operating as a business, is continuing to thrive financially. But it is also a social hub. And you also need somebody who really cares about it being a social hub. And those two things might, in one person, be in a certain amount of conflict. But if you have a couple like Fallon and Harrison, where you have one of each, then you end up with a situation, I think, that would work better, perhaps, than the Kent and Jolene current situation, where I think Jolene is trying to do both and Kenton's a complete waste of space.
Well, your assessment is absolutely top. I couldn't agree more with you, which actually makes a very boring podcast. So I must stop doing this. But we never confer on what we're going to say beforehand, do we? So I am going to agree with you on this one as well. I think they are ideal because she's got that drive and that want to do things and want to make a go at it. Whereas he'll be happily to do the dogs bodging around, the moving of barrels, etc., and chatting to people. As I said earlier, he wants to be involved with the cricket. He wants to be, and that is an ambition. A lot of people, I know several people who are really very happy to do something in their life that gives them the security to be comfortable with themselves. And that's a great ambition, to be involved in the community. I think Harrison would be an ideal mine host in a pub and also bring a lot of fun into things. And of course, he'd be hearing lots of stuff, but he'd be no longer under the constraints of the police force for sharing and guiding people. I think he'd be a better host than Kenton is, because I think Kenton tends to put himself in front, and whereas actually it's the client, isn't it, that should be in front. So.
Yes, I've never quite understood what drives Kenton, apart from this sort of general extroversion and so on.
As we've are on the subject of the pub, it's been quite surprising that we've had absolutely nothing in the pub this week at all, whereas we were all over the pub for the last couple of weeks. Hopefully Jolene settled down and Kenton is walking around like a spring rabbit.
That's true. The other thing we haven't heard anything of this week is an archer. Nobody with the name of Archer spoke all week.
Really?
And the only direct descendant of Dan and Doris, which is my, I think, the true definition of Archer, the only one of those that appeared this week was Alice.
Well, good. Well spotted, Stephen, Mr. Statistic.
So those are the first few calls, and there are a couple more to come, and we'll hear them very soon. If you'd like to join in by calling us yourself or dropping us a line by message or email, Jacqueline is here to tell you how. And all the details will also be in the show notes.
Now, the first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumtdum. And don't forget that T in the middle. The next option is to send us a voice note or message via WhatsApp on 07810 012881 or add a +44 and remove that first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. Or finally, we have an email address you can contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views. Maximum of 250 words, please. The email is dumtydum@gmail.com. And do bear in mind, you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And now let's get back to our calls. And next up, we have Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. As you know, I've been a big supporter of the whole Alistair and Denise thing for some time. And so, as you might imagine, I've had a bit of a mixed week with them. It was quite thrilling when they both started to be honest about stuff again, although they already had when they nearly got together at Christmas. And there's something quite endearing about Alistair going a bit all sort of giddy and excited and sobbing in the cupboard or whatever. They're like, it does seem very, very inappropriate and a bit daft. I mean, love does things to people, doesn't it, and makes them go make all sorts of stupid decisions, but they certainly have done some of those. And for two people who are really quite upstanding sort of moral types on the whole, I thought it was a bit unlikely, but there you go. What can you say? I don't understand how Paul is not suspicious at all. It doesn't even seem to be suspicious. Never mind, they haven't had to deny it to Paul, which I suppose in some ways is a good thing, but still, I thought that was all very unlikely. However, the whole, the outburst from Jakob, where he just took Paul down, I thought was hilarious in a way, because Jakob is just very straight talking, isn't he? He's not a man for nuance. He was trying to defend Alistair, but he did it in a really, really clunky way. And it's very Jakob. It was well meant, but landed badly. I'm sure it won't be the last time he does something like that. So yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't understand why he would be trying to change practice. Why doesn't he just retire? I don't know. I do hope they get together in the end though, but Denise really needs to break it off with her husband first and sort their lives out at that end. Anyway, keep up the good work. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for that, Claire. Yeah, like you, I find it kind of endearing, but slightly creepy and definitely very daft as a story, because in the workplace, you certainly wouldn't be creeping around in store cupboards, etc. I don't understand why Denise has only just come back from working in other practices for the same company. So surely, rather than a vet, the vet who set up the practice, who's been running that practice and brought it and has got a partner with Jakob, why he would be thinking about leaving. Surely, if anybody should be moving on, it should be Denise who should be going back to working at other practices in the same company. So I don't quite understand why Alistair has decided, but there we go. Now, I actually am a great supporter of Jakob, because he's kind of socially awkward. He does tend to get to the end of his tether. We've seen it in the past. And I thought that that whole meeting post the visit of Don, Doug, whoever he was, not the nice one.
The nice one is Doug and the not so nice one is Don. Doug is Lovell and Don is James.
All right, there you go. Well, I just felt that that whole little haranguing of each other and the fact that Denise, Alistair and Jakob know the reason why Alistair is announcing this and Paul doesn't, very surprising that he hasn't got any hints, but he is very much into himself. He's very concentrating on his own thing, typical of a young man, that his thing has been his dad, his granny, his whatever's going on in his life. And it always has been. That's been Paul through and through. Yeah, interesting. But I think this story is going to be one of those, we're either going to love it or hate it stories.
Yes, it's not just Alistair, Denise and Jakob who know about this, because Jim does and Jazza does.
Yeah.
So the idea that it won't leak out one way or the other seems a bit absurd. I agree with you that logic says that if one of them is going to move on, it should be Denise, and she seems to be more readily employable within Lovell James, as was demonstrated by her move to wherever it was in the Black Country or Birmingham. I think Alistair is just has this self-sacrificing chivalric streak to him. And that was this showing, but it was showing so much that I was getting whiplash. We started the week with him determined to leave. Then he was definitely staying. Then he was going again. And I think we're now back to him probably staying now that he realizes that it wasn't Denise who was determined to fix their marriage, but John. I don't know. Will we get further whiplash next week, or will we be able to move on to a different storyline for a while and give it a rest? Because I think we spent a bit too much time at the vets.
I feel like we spent a lot of time at the vets since Christmas. I wouldn't say whiplash. I was thinking of a tennis match, really, from one side to the other. But whiplash if you want, Stephen. We'll let you have that.
Now let's move on to our final call. This one was rather long, so I hope the caller in or doesn't mind that I have trimmed it a bit, but I've kept in all the important stuff. And this call is a welcome return from Isabel.
Hello. This is not my first call. This is my first call in about 2 years. My name is Isabel, and the last time I called in at Dumpty Dum, I was 15. How much has changed? I personally hope I have changed for the better in the last couple of years. But anyways, we're not here to talk about me. I'm here to talk about the Archers. The whole Harrison, Fallon, Alice, Harry storyline. I was quite shocked to learn that Harry was a drinker, to be honest. He seemed so, I don't know. I just it was just a bit of a shock. But I just hope he gets the help he needs. And I hope that Alice is happy eventually, because I do want Alice to be happy. And I want people in Ambridge to be happy, and just leave people outside as well. But in this context, people in the Archers. I thought that Alice kind of did make everything worse for Harrison in that whole shebang with Alice and Harrison's boss. Not the best thing to do, if I'm honest. And I seriously hope that everything turns out okay for Harrison and Alice and Fallon and Harry and everyone involved in the end. Because that's all I want, really, and I want everything to turn out okay. But anyway, this whole Paul and Alistair and Denise Jacob story, I thought that Paul was a little bit only caring about himself on, I think it was Thursday. I did watch on Thursday. So yeah, I thought that it was a bit self-centered. He could have handled it a lot better. I don't want Alistair to leave. I think it's a little bit extreme, personally. But to be honest, I thought that Alistair and Denise might have had feelings for each other for quite a long time. I started having suspicions when Denise did her transfer and stuff like that. But now it's confirmed, and I hope that those two can be happy and everything. And yeah, I thought Paul could have done a lot better. Oh, and can I have a serious rant about that ending? It was just a blot. You find out Harrison's just told Chris all this, and then Alice comes in and it's, oh, can we do the cake now? And Chris is like, no, it's not too soon for the cake. And then it just ends. Like, where's the story? Where's the drama? Just ended. That's going to be all for my call today. I understand you've stopped playing Dumpty Dums at the start of the podcast, but I got told that I can include one in the call anyway, so I'll include one. Thank you for listening. Sorry for the long call.
Thank you for that call, Isabel. Welcome back. And you have a very beautiful singing voice. I think the last point you made is the one that I wanted to pick up on, which is a business about Chris, because nobody else has really mentioned that. And I think that, yes, it was a bit of an odd way to end the week, but in a way it was a very subtle cliffhanger, because we now know Chris knows that Harry is a drinker and Chris is incredibly moralistic in this space. And he is going to hit the roof, or he has. As soon as he gets the chance, he will go off and he will be very, very angry. Harry could have started a relationship with Alice without revealing that he was a drinker. And in Chris's view, I'm sure he will be absolutely imperiling Alice's continuing sobriety. So I think that there is definitely a next act in the drama, which will involve Chris confronting Harry. And I have a horrible feeling, and I don't often do plot predictions, but here's one, that Chris will confront Harry. Harry will be so annoyed that he will change his mind about what he says about Harrison, and that will scupper Harrison at the inquiry. And I think that that will be because Chris has overreacted, as he does regularly. And so I think what felt like a quiet ending of the week is more like a ticking time bomb.
That's very interesting. Yeah, thanks for calling back. Thank you for carrying on listening to The Archers and hopefully Dumpty Dum during the years before you turned 18. And congratulations on turning 18, Isabel. Now, I also picked up on your last point and wanted to make a point. This was a child's birthday party. These were two mates chatting in the kitchen. The mum, who's obviously running the party and in the room with the children and the other guests, comes in and says, shall we serve the cake now? You're not going to go, why didn't you tell me about that? As Chris might have done. Of course, you're not going to make a fuss and spoil the party. They're adults. Although Chris is reactive, I felt like it was a good ending because it did, as you said, left you on a cliffhanger and very, very true to type. I would say that having that calming, let's carry on, get on with the party because this is, we've got a house full of guests. There we go. So I didn't agree with you that on Isabel. Great to hear from you. Try and keep your calls to less than 2 minutes because that was a very long call. Stephen's done a brilliant edit on it to get it down to fit it into the rules. But yeah, carry on calling in when you can.
Yes, thank you, Isabel. I look forward to hearing you again soon. So those are all the calls. Thank you all for calling in. And please do keep on calling. And if you didn't call in this week, then why not call in next week?
Stephen, before we go on to the next bit, can we talk about the things we haven't had calls about? I'm desperate.
Okay, what would you like to talk about?
World Book Day. Why do three-year-olds have to dress up for World Book Days?
It's
I don't understand it.
It's a thing, and it seems to me that the rule is everybody has to dress up as something from Harry Potter, because since Harry Potter has been a thing, it has totally dominated World Book Day.
Really? In fact, funnily enough, on social media, I saw somebody had put a photograph taken in Tesco's or some other supermarket of all these costumes advertising for World Book Day. Now, I just find that commercialization of stuff like that is not my thing. And it makes me infuriated. And the fact that Alice and Jim went off, and Jim obviously tried to help. And Jim has been I love Jim. And he's been a big influence and help to Alice. And I think he's been a sounding board that without the emotion of that Brian has. And I thought it was great that he went out and ruffled in the kit in the village hall to look for things. Hilarious amount of talking about things that were totally inappropriate. But that's Jim. So I enjoyed that part of the storyline. And the fact that it was a hungry caterpillar and all the rest of it, was one of those things. And play food, etc. Yeah, that's good. Hungry Caterpillar is a staple, isn't it? But and not Harry Potter. But I hate that idea that parents who are put under pressure to dress up their children 3 years old, let alone at 8 year olds, when you've got someone who might not even want to dress up. So there you go. That was my little thing I have to get that off my chest. Sorry, you can cut all that out, Stephen.
No, I do think that World Book Day is actually a very good thing, because too many children don't get exposed to books. I grew up in a house full of books, and I read and I read and I read, and I was a member of the Puffin Club, and
me too,
and read through pretty much every Puffin book that was published.
Yeah, I still have some.
I've got some, and I've gone back and got other editions of things like Alan Garner. I have a very early version of the Owl Service with that.
Funny enough, I was thinking about the Owl Service the other day, because I do remember seeing a child walking down the street in Scarborough quite a few years ago, dressed as an owl, and somebody said, World Book Day.
Whether or not that was an Alan Garner owl, I don't know, because it's actually quite a haunting story. But it has been commercialised, obviously. And as I said, Harry Potter has become so popular and so dominant that it became very easy to flog the sort of Harry Potter outfits that would normally be sold at Halloween for World Book Day as well. So I think that it has become a victim of commercialization to some extent. And that's reducing the breadth of imagination, because it was an opportunity for people to show off the books they like.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of peer pressure now to like a particular sort of book that's popular at the time. And so you're losing a bit of that. But I think the World Book Day was a really good idea to start with. And I still think that where schools focus very much on the books rather than on the dressing up, it's a very good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. But very interesting, it was World Book Day on Thursday and Women's Day on Friday.
Yes, International Women's Day.
And we had no mention of that at all. So that was quite I just found it an interesting contrast. Although we've had a women-heavy week in Ambridge, haven't we?
Yes, Friday was also Tom and Natasha's wedding anniversary and Natasha's birthday.
Yes, and now that surprised me when you posted that on our Facebook page. It's amazing what you find out when you log into Facebook, Dumpty Dum page. Natasha, how old is she? 44?
44, yes. No, 42.
42. Oh, yeah, because the twins are two. So she was 40 when she had the twins. Now that completely passed me by during that storyline. So there you go.
Now, did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week?
Yes, we did. We received an email from our lovely and regular now correspondent in Indiana with the title, All Creatures Great and Paul. And it goes like this. Greetings, Stephen, Jacqueline and all Dumpty Dumland. As of Thursday, the vet's office has turned into a nursery with all the kids behaving badly. The generally dull Alistair and the worrisome Denise have been snogging in cupboards, which led to Alistair deciding to leave the practice, which has led to Paul throwing a glorious fit, verging on a meltdown. I like this crazier, more unhinged Paul, by the way. Not to be outdone, Jakob levels into Paul in front of his strangely silent mother, which leads me to how much I really sort of hate Jakob. I always have. There is nothing funny or charming about him. I would listen to Tony or Tom or Adam any day before having to listen to Jacob. There is seriously not a single time I've enjoyed him. Now, before anyone says he's autistic, I will counter with the fact that has never actually been stated, and it has become our go-to excuse for every awkward character on radio and television. I've worked in the field of autism and taught children with autism, and I will state very firmly, being awkward and lacking in manners is not the same thing as autism. Sometimes people are just awkward and badly behaved. This is not autism. Speaking of badly behaved people, Harrison again. How is that it has taken until Thursday for Fallon to break down and tell him money is an issue and he should look for a job? And what is more, he should have always been looking. I've said it before and I'll say it again. The whole time Fallon was struggling with losing her business to Natasha, Harrison never once thought that he should look for more work. And that's worrisome. Far more wearisome than his hearing and what Harry Chalcott will say. The most valuable player of the week was Brian, who defended Alice like a lion. Brian gets better and better and in the midst of a lot of silliness. I adore him. Until next week, Chris in Indiana.
Thank you, Chris, for that. I don't quite agree with you about Jacob being boring and tedious. I find him occasionally quite entertaining, mostly when he's interacting with Kate rather than when he's at the vet surgery. But I do totally agree with you about the willingness of people to diagnose him with autism. I agree completely with you. He's not autistic. I think even saying something like on the spectrum is a bit casual and inappropriate. He is socially awkward, and there are lots of reasons why people might be socially awkward. And I think that it's a character trait. I don't think we need to medicalize that. I think we're too ready to turn everything into a clinical condition. But as I said, I think that he is entertaining when he's contrasted with Kate. I think that that's his strength rather than anything else.
Yes, I enjoy him with Kate as well. I completely agree with Chris about enjoying Brian. I feel like Brian has come into his own since the death of Jenny. He's, as Sue said earlier on, he's become a daddy bear. He's very protective of his children. He's very supportive. I love the moment in the week when, at the beginning of the week, when he said they talked about auras, him and Alice, and Kate had suspected there was something wrong with Harry. And he said, oh, God, I can't cope with anybody else in the family being all woo-woo. It made me laugh out loud. Very well written. And of course, Charles Collingwood is an inveterate actor and professional and a very charming man in real life as well. I think that Brian, yeah, keep on going, Brian. I love you.
Yes, I think that it's quite realistic that with the sad loss of Jennifer, he has actually become liberated in some ways.
Yeah.
Now, before we move on to our Facebook group, I just wanted to say a word or two about Patreon. Those of you who are patrons of Dumpty Dum should have received a newsletter this week. At this stage, it's something of a pilot, and we plan to publish it weekly. And we've just shared it to the Facebook group, and it comes on the Facebook group a few days after it reaches Patreons. But it's a first step towards coming up with a proper offering to those of you who are willing to support Dumpty Dum financially. And if you have ideas for additional things you'd like to see in a Dumpty Dum newsletter, please let us know either via Patreon. I believe you can comment on the Patreon post on the website where the newsletter is, or in the Facebook group. And we're really grateful to those of you who are already patrons. As soon as we found our feet with it, we're planning to offer ad-free podcasts, so that will be a separate stream for Patreons only. And we have a number of ideas for additional bonus content for patrons. I'm conscious we also have some people who make regular contributions via PayPal, and we'll be looking at what we can offer to those wonderful subscribers too. So watch this space. Now let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very busy, friendly, thoughtful, and thought-provoking members, and we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest half dozen of them, who are Sandra Shipton, Lindsay Pettit-Lee, Pearl Floyd,
Nancy Latham, Anthony Strong, and Isabel Harrison. So let's hear about our Facebook group and what we've all been talking about this week from Ben in Shanghai.
As well as being a highly entertaining week in our ears, our Facebook page has been as lively as ever. Chris Gibson pointed out that A is for Alistair and also adultery, while Mary Ray reminded us that kissing in cupboards, or what seems to be kissing all over Ambridge, is hardly adultery. Maybe just some kind of middle-aged Grange Hill storyline, but what happens in the medical supply cupboard stays in the medical supply cupboard. Not to miss a beat on the public information front, the inclusion of World Book Day on Thursday well and truly captured people's hearts and mind, with outpourings of love for Professor Jim Lloyd's fancy dress suggestions for dear little Martha. This also struck a chord with me as I organised our school's event and spent most of Thursday dressed up as Dumbledore. And finally, there has been much speculation about pregnancy, fertility, and some interesting observation that no woman in Ambridge has control over either, with the general consensus being that both Fallon and Alice may have buns in the oven. I wonder if Fallon is now entitled to maternity leave as well as sick pay. Until next time, this is the Facebook Roundup from Ben in Shanghai.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If you'd like to join them, please do, but don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you're a real person. Now, did we have any reviews this week?
Yeah, amazing. We've had 3 5-star reviews. Absolutely delighted with you all. The first is from Katie Mack via Apple Podcasts, and it goes like this. Utterly brilliant for all things Ambridge. 5 stars. I discovered The Archers 2 years ago. Frustratingly, I knew no other fans to enthuse with or share opinions with about the goings-on in Ambridge until I discovered Dumpty Dum. This excellent weekly podcast, global community, never fails to inform, entertain and provide me with fresh insights and ideas, which in turn help me appreciate the Archers so much more. I'm not an avid fan of social media, but Dumpty Dum has even had me logging on to Blue Sky to get more involved. Keep doing what you're doing, Stephen, Jacqueline, and all the Dumpty Dum team. It's marvellous and much appreciated. Thank you. That's Kate from East Lothian, Scotland. And on Blue Sky, she is at katiecapers.bsky.social.
Next up is another 5-star review, and this one is from Pope Vidarii, who's in the UK, and it's entitled Neo-Structuralist Analysis of Rural Discourse. Foucault would be proud of this podcast that on the surface is a witty and whimsical discussion of the Radio 4 show, The Archers, but delve deeper and you get a neo-structuralist analysis of rural life. The sign and signifier within Tweet of the Week is particularly insightful, superficially an irrelevant throwaway comment, but in reality a meaningful statement upon Camus' Myth of Sisyphus, viewed through the prism of a 40-something farm labourer. Brilliant. And that's from Pope Vidarii via Apple Podcasts.
Wow. And the last review is from Jazzy Doo in the US of A. 5 stars. I give 5 stars after every episode, but it seems the written word counts for more in the ratings algorithm. So here goes. Sunday morning coffee is that much more enjoyable while listening to this breakdown of the Archers week. You are very much appreciated. Thank you. Well, that is fantastic. Thank you for all of those reviews. Please keep them coming. If you've written one years ago, think about writing another one, and that'd be great for us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Now on to Twitter, where you'll find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A, so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. And as well as at Dumpty Dum, I can be found at Wenlock House.
And I can be found at Jberto Sanguin. But we're both spending a bit more time discussing the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at jberto.bsky.social.
And I am at wenlock.bsky.social. So let's find out who has won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, pushcat. Or should that be XX these days?
Hello, Stephen, Jacqueline and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, Kate, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on both Twitter and Blue Sky, there was a lot of consternation about the news that the omnibus edition of The Archers is being moved to positions on the schedule with Desert Island Discs. It will also be released on BBC Sounds earlier for those overseas. A lot of the people who tweet along say they won't be able to do it later in the day. And there's a fear that this will be the final death knell for simultaneous listening with a bunch of other people you've never met. As Moira O'Shaughnessy at Mosh 020 said, "This is an outrage." Or as Nick at Check Your Sheds put it, "This is the worst thing that's happened in my entire life." Well, maybe slightly overstating it, but I do agree. There was also speculation rife on the Twitters. For example, from Seol Tangi at I Care Yes I Do, that Harry would turn up drunk at Martha's party, which Brian Holding at Buggy Swires thought would be a reflection back of when Alice was drunk at Martha's christening, making it a sort of family tradition. There was also more discussion of Harry's copious sniffing and whether it's a sign of an addiction other than simply to alcohol. Also, there was a lot of dislike for Paul and his diva-ish behaviour, as well as questions about whether Alistair will ever get to take Denise up Lakey Hill. But on that note, it's time for the medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's Hugsy at hugsy.bsky.scotial, with one about Alistair and Denise that should really be sung. Well, he knows that she knows that he knows that she knows, and so on. The silver medalist is Sarah Mattox, at Sarah_Mattox. Now we need Kate to enter the vet shenanigans and make everything much worse. And the gold medal goes to Calf Cauliflower Eclair Jones, at CalfPop. Sergeant Burns' copy of Policing for Dummies has got a big chunk of the book missing. And on that note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week.
Thank you, Theo, for that meaningful statement upon Camus' Myth of Sisyphus viewed through the prism of a 40-something farm labourer. Brilliant. Now, don't forget, we're also on Instagram at Dumpty Dum, where Theo looks after things. And I don't know what the post-structuralist analysis of our Instagram feed is, but maybe Pope the Dairy E will be able to comment on that.
Indeed.
But if there's any Dumpty Dummer out there who'd like to take over, I think Theo would be very happy if somebody could be a bit more active than she is able to be.
Now, next week, we'll once again be recording at the normal time of first thing Saturday morning. So please get your calls in by midnight on Friday UK time. As we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the whole team who look after our social media and support us in so many invaluable ways. Thanks to you lot too, this lovely Dumpty Dum community, which is really why we carry on doing this every week.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices, and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
And thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We are now off to order a plethora of furniture for Martha's enormous doll's house. So it's au revoir from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Dumpty diddly dum, Dumpty diddly dum, Dumpty dum, Dumpty diddly dum.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.